And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome into the Forum Club Playoff Edition. Lakers and Suns are tied 1-1. I am Bill Oram, joined as always by Jovan Buha and Anthony Slater. Guys, this is kind of the long anticipated moment for the Lakers. The postseason is here. The idea that they could just hit the switch and put kind of some of their regular season maladies behind them in the playoffs is being tested, but I think we can all agree they're in pretty darn good shape, all things considered. A Suns team that has a significantly limited Chris Paul, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis both coming off of pretty monster game twos. Where are you guys at on this series and with this Lakers team right now?
I think it shifted a lot last night because, I mean, we were talking more about LeBron's ankle coming into game two than Paul's shoulder. Like, it was known that it was a problem, but he wasn't listed on the injury report. He had played, down the stretch of game one. He wasn't really needed that much, so I didn't think it was as limiting as it clearly was. But to watch how he played last night, he was a hindrance to them when he was on the floor. And then obviously when he's off the floor, he's not on the floor. Campaign was, fine. I mean, I think it's been a little bit, like, he had some nice moments. I think Campaign shot 6 of 15. He has some late turnovers. I mean, he's clearly not, like, the answer to slay the Lakers down the stretch. Phoenix needs Chris Paul to be Chris Paul, and I just don't know if – we'll see. I mean, it's a weird injury.
Yeah, I think this injury swings the series. I will say I've been impressed with Phoenix. The fact that they almost went up 2-0 despite Chris Paul being physically compromised, and essentially three of the four halves, six of the eight quarters. Bill and I were texting during the fourth quarter. Like, we were like, are they about to go down 0-2 and pull a Clippers? Had to work that one in. I think the Lakers are in the driver's seat right now, where the series is shifting back to LA. They have the momentum now. I do think not having Chris Paul, like, I just don't think Phoenix has enough offense right now, right? Like, I thought the Lakers were much better in their screen coverages with Devin Booker. That was something that Frank Vogel highlighted after the game with Andre Drummond and Marc Gasol. I thought going to Gasol, even though Phoenix really hunted him and deliberately tried to play him off the floor, I thought he had some good defensive sequences, and I thought provided, hit a three, provided really good spacing offensively. And you just saw, I thought Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder were unlocked with Marc Gasol on the floor and that additional spacing. So I think Frank deserves credit for some of the game two adjustments. I think LeBron and AD deserve credit for their game two bounce back performances. And I think that the Lakers are looking like they're going to win this series in probably five or six games.
Five games.
I can see five. I think it's six. I think the Suns have enough firepower. I think Ayton has been so good in this series. I don't know if he's going to do that every game, but I think the combo of he and Devin Booker is going to get the Suns another win here, even if CP is not on the floor. But the Lakers are going to win this series because even with all the issues the Lakers have had this year and all the things they're trying to figure out on the fly, if the Lakers cannot beat this Suns team without a fully healthy Chris Paul, then their underlying issues are even greater than we've realized, because they are built to be able to move on relatively easily here. That doesn't mean the Lakers are without trouble, without problems. That doesn't mean that they are the favorite in the West, although with the Clippers, and I'm sure we're going to just allude to this throughout this entire conversation, but with the Clippers suddenly looking dead in the water against the Mavs, the West is even more wide open than ever. The Lakers had the easiest path that they could have had, I thought, coming into this series, and that assumed a potential Clippers matchup down the road. that does not seem likely right now. I mean, 0-2 is not insurmountable. We've seen it, but the Clippers don't look like a team that is capable of coming back at this moment. But I think the Lakers are going to move on, and then it becomes a question of Portland, Denver. But let's dive into some of the more well.
I just let's yeah. I was going to say like Phoenix isn't dead.
Phoenix, they're not dead. They're not winning, but Slater, they're not winning this series without Chris Paul.
Well, let's talk about this Chris Paul injury for a second, because I've had a few like you know those like random like online doctors that love to be like, oh, I know exactly what's going on here, and like this is, you know, it stinger. You know, he didn't. It's not like he separated his shoulder, right? I mean, usually when you hear like shoulder contusion, it's like something with his shoulder. He grabbed at his trap, and it was when his like, you know, head was kind of tilted. It was a weird injury. I don't know if you guys have seen the slow-mo view. It seems to be some kind of nerve thing, stinger. He was like,
well, and then you talk, and then his hand isn't working. Right.
Yeah. So he's dribbling and it kind of, and he's losing the ball, and you can tell he's like, what the hell? Like, I'm Chris Paul. Why am I losing my dribble right now? So it's something that's like, he has kind of a weakened right arm, which obviously is just like killer for a guy who loves mid-range and you know, everything he's doing. They tried to let him go. He was trying to throw cross-court pass last night, and he was just like floating them basically right into Anthony Davis's hands. So yes, if that Chris Paul is the Chris Paul who remains the rest of the series, Phoenix doesn't have a shot. But I mean, you read these people that say sometimes this stuff goes away, you know, maybe just a few more days and like the right arm loosens up and Chris Paul's back. Like, I don't think this is necessarily some type of long-term thing. I could see Phoenix if Chris Paul's he's not responding to treatment in the next 24 hours, I could see them trying to sit him game three. And then I believe you have 2 days off, right? Between game three and four, you give him like a 5-day break. And if he's feeling back to himself by Sunday, assuming they're down 2-1, I mean, you know, they could full throttle really go for that Sunday one. And I could see it being 2-2 going back to Phoenix if Chris Paul re-arrives in this series, because Phoenix is very good when they're all together.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, and I guess that's a fair point. I've looked at this mostly as game two was kind of the chance for Chris Paul to prove that he was going to be able to get right in this series, because it is, you know, I mean, it is, you know, basically it's not a long, you know, he has basically until Sunday. I think that's basically it. If he's not 100% by Sunday, then the Suns are dead to me. But again, like I said, I do think this. I think the Suns are capable of winning a game without Chris Paul, and more to the point, I think the Lakers are capable of losing a game to the Suns without Chris Paul, because you know they have to figure things out on a nightly basis. What's going to work against DeAndre Ayton? What adjustments has Monty Williams made? Because I'm going to guarantee you that Monty Williams is going to come with, you know, different schemes for, you know, Marc Gasol and ways to try to keep Andre Drummond off the glass, who has Andre Drummond's been tremendous on the offensive boards through the first two games, and especially in game two. So, I mean, there's a lot of strategy going on here. I don't know if the Lakers can just run out the same rotation that we saw in game two and expect it to be as successful as it was. But, you know, what I wrote about last night off last night's game was it was interesting, because we went into game two really focused on adjustments and rotations and the big man rotation and what Frank was going to do adjustment wise. And that game, as it often did last year in the playoffs, and as it will for as long as the Lakers are playing, really came down to how good can LeBron and Anthony Davis be. And those two guys, as we saw throughout the finals run last year, just made absolutely necessary critical shots. And Slater, I know you went through this with the Warriors. You know, all these other things that are happening kind of beneath the top guys absolutely matter. But at the end of the game, you know, it really comes down to how good your stars can be. And in terms of shot making, LeBron and AD were absolutely on point in the fourth quarter, particularly Anthony Davis had 14 of his 34 in the fourth quarter. A lot of that was from the line, but they each had big threes. What were your guys' thoughts on kind of how those two dudes executed down the stretch? And does that say anything about how we view the Lakers as champions or as champion contenders, or is it just kind of what we already knew, that those guys are really, really good and they got just enough support last night to win game two?
It was sort of what we already knew, but we hadn't seen it in a while. You know, I think especially for LeBron, since he returned from, I guess, the second return from the ankle injury, he's just not looked like himself. And he had not dunked in 2.5 games. You know, in the opening minutes, he gets a couple dunks, including that lob that his head was almost at the rim, which we hadn't really seen him get that high since the beginning of the season. So just those two guys taking over was sort of what we expect, but we didn't see that in game one. I also thought defensively, both guys were more active, and especially LeBron, like, he was particularly bad in game one, and just losing, you know, Mikal Bridges on back cuts along the baseline, and he blew a ton of assignments in game one, and I thought he was much sharper in game two. I will say, though, the one thing I still don't love about LeBron and AD right now is I feel like they're still too jump shot heavy, and even down the stretch of game two, it's you know, like Anthony Davis made a couple threes last night, but we've had plenty of games this season where he doesn't make his threes and he goes 0-for-4. And if Anthony Davis misses that three, are the Lakers down 0-2? And I know you can kind of play that game with you know, almost any shot, but I don't think you betting on Anthony Davis all of a sudden being like a 50% three-point shooter is something that, you know, is going to be sustainable. So I think it was progress. They won the game. They both looked better physically on both ends, but moving forward to win this series, and to, I think they'll be heavily favored against Denver or Portland in the next round, but then to win that conference finals against whoever comes out, Utah, Clippers, Dallas, they're going to have to be much sharper and Memphis. Really be attacked.
I was going to say, you just completely left the series leading Memphis Grizzlies for dead.
I can't pick them. But yeah, I mean, I just, and then going to like the finals potentially, like those guys need to be getting to the rim. And that was kind of tied into my story that I wrote on Dennis Schroeder and Andre Drummond, that those guys had 12 of the Lakers 21 baskets in the paint. And I thought that it was a nice balance to the offense of Dennis going downhill. Like there's one clip where LeBron reverses it to the weak side. Dennis just catches and goes, and he blows by Jay Crowder for a layup. And it's like, that's what Dennis needs to be doing on a nightly basis of, on the weak side, you catch it and go, no dribbling, dancing, you know, step back shot. Like, you need to go to the rim. And I think we saw some of the holes in the Suns defense last night. Andre Drummond also had a really good game. So I think, but my one thing with LeBron and AD is I want to see them inside more. I think the jump shooting, AD is not shooting the way he did last postseason. And if they're relying on that, I don't think that that's a winning formula long term.
Yeah, I think with Davis, it's like it's a mental thing. Like, just be assertive, be that guy every game. You know, how many, if he's just plays with that type of force, he's going to get 14 free throws at least per game, right? I mean, like, there's just, you know, Jay Crowder's going to get in foul trouble. And by the way, Jay Crowder getting in foul trouble completely changes the game for Phoenix, because did you see Dario Saric last night? I mean, that was a horrendous performance. Like, he looked like he didn't want
to. Jay Crowder had two fouls in the first 58 seconds of the game, and he got kicked in the nuts. I mean, it's probably the worst first minute of a game in playoff history.
Yes, and then he was replaced by a guy who looked afraid to pass the ball, didn't want it in his hands. I mean, Saric made a few turnovers, and it's just clearly the front court rotation beyond Crowder Ayton is a problem for Phoenix. And if Davis, you know, if Davis plays that way right off the tip, like, I could see Crowder getting two more, you know, fouls, maybe not in the first 58 seconds plus a nut kick, but, you know, maybe the first 4 minutes. For LeBron, though, to me, it still seems like a physical thing. I mean, we know he doesn't, it's not that he doesn't want to be assertive in the playoffs. I just still don't know with him on that. Like, he just doesn't look that burst, that explosion that can get by a defender, quicker wing defenders like Bridges. It just still doesn't necessarily seem there. Now, he still can will himself into pretty good games, and if the jumper's there, like that fading corner three was awesome.
That was insane.
That was a crazy shot. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, part of me is like, the Lakers still, particularly offensively, don't look like it to me. But at the same time, I mean, look around the West. I mean, are we about to say, like, Dallas is their biggest competitor right now? I don't know. I mean, like,
with the way Luka's playing, they might be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, the best team in the NBA right now, it seems to be Brooklyn Nets. I mean, it's very early in the playoffs, and they're playing not a good opponent in the first round, but they look frisky. Blake Griffin looks frisky right now, but that's another conversation.
Dunking on people.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you guys think? Go ahead, Bill.
I don't know. I don't want us to transition to the same thing, but I think there is a pretty significant subject to get to, because we've seen two pretty significant Lakers role players in the first two games both put up goose eggs. In game one, it was Kyle Kuzma. And then I think more just interestingly, in game two, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope goes, I think, 0 for 4, and he goes scoreless, but is simultaneously a game best plus 19, and was on the floor, you know, through all the critical possessions, was guarding Devin Booker. Did Kentavious Caldwell-Pope have a good game in game two?
Got yelled at by LeBron late for not shooting.
Incredible moment, by the way, and all over their Instagram. You know, LeBron is in KCP's face saying, I want you to shoot, because I thought KCP, and obviously LeBron did too, was way too passive, passed up a lot of open threes. And there was even a moment in the first half that I don't think made the broadcast, but the Lakers were at the foul line and KCP came back over to the Lakers bench on the other end of the floor. And AD basically did the same thing where he kind of put his hands on KCP's head and was getting right in his ear, you know, and kind of pounding something into his head, presumably the same message. So KCP, who is one of their most important floor spacers, not shooting the ball, but also providing critical defense on Devin Booker. So again, I ask the question, was he good in game two?
He's like a microcosm of like their team right now, with like great defensively, good plus minus, winning games, and he's kind of in his head offensively. They can win this way. They kind of won that way in the bubble last year, right? They were just this like power team that had kind of bucked the trend of just trying to be like, you know, spread the floor with as many 3-point shooters as possible. But the reality of, Bill, you kind of alluded to in the bubble, what did KCP shoot in the playoffs last season? Like 40-something percent from three?
He was north of 40, whatever it was. And he averaged, I know Jovan looked this up last night, he and Kuz both averaged 11 points a game.
Yeah. And Davis... Well, like Davis's jumper was like scorching for basically four straight rounds, like unsustainably probably. So their offense isn't where it was right now. Now, can it get there? Sure. I mean, we could be talking next week and KCP will rattle off, you know, three straight really good 3-point shooting nights. But as good as I would say, yeah. I mean, generally he obviously contributed to winning last night, and he continues to defensively. But like his funk that he's in is still something that needs to be solved offensively.
I mean, they're shooting 28.8% to be exact on threes right now in the playoffs, and it's been two games, but it feels like this isn't unsustainable. Like, I mean, they'll shoot better, but you don't feel great about them getting up to like 36%, right? Like, you know, this is kind of an issue, and I think honestly, like that's the one thing that's giving me pause right now is like, if Chris Paul were healthy, I think Phoenix is up 2-0, like. You know, I know we could play that again. We could always play the if game or this or that. But like, I felt like Phoenix is like the biggest issue last night was just that Phoenix couldn't score. And you have to give the Lakers, you know, defense credit. But it was basically like just shut down Booker and Ayton, and no one else is going to do anything. Like their guys are missing shots as well. But I think those guys are going to kind of bounce back. And then like you said, Campaign has been awful. Through the first two games, and I know he hit a couple threes last night, but like he's been chucking and I he's think taking some bad chucking. Shots.
He was very fun in the third.
He had nice moments. He generally gave them what they needed last night, which was a boost of like life, because I could imagine that entire team was like, holy shit, Chris Paul is like has one arm out here. And he came in, he had some threes, yelling at the crowd, like he juiced the building. But then, yeah, I mean, you look, you're like, oh, 6 of 15, oh, a few turnovers, you're like, you know, maybe it wasn't as awesome of a performance as we thought. But yeah, I mean, you're mentioning it with the offense. Who do you guys feel bet like if lining up wide open three right now in the Lakers? Who do you want taking it? Schroeder, I guess.
Marc Gasol.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, he's been at 40 plus percent for like 8 weeks now or something.
They don't have like a knockdown guy.
No,
which they didn't last year.
I mean, they have Ben McLemore, but then you have to put Ben McLemore.
I might feel best about him.
The downside to that is that you have to put Ben McLemore in the game to make it to have that happen.
So, and you know, as it almost when you do something like that, when you have a team of 3-point shooters like that, you can almost not feel comfortable going into any game that you're for sure going to win, because you can just be ice cold. And you know they're going to face, you know, that's the opposite of what Dallas spaces the floor like crazy. And if that is like the matchup down the line, that will be kind of a curious clash of styles.
Yeah. I feel like it's supposed to be KCP, right? Like it's supposed to be, he's supposed to be the 3-and-D guy. He did it last
season. That's his job.
But
that's his job.
It's, I don't know. I mean, and that's been, you know, I think now kind of seeing this matchup through two games, I do think it would have been fascinating to see a healthy Chris Paul, because I think, you know, I at this point, I think two of the Lakers' biggest weaknesses are, or arguably their two biggest, are transition defense, which they were horrible in last season. They were better in this season. But still, when a team can get them going back in transition, they can really attack them. And then the three-point shooting. And Phoenix clearly excels in both of those areas. I know Chris Paul teams don't like to play fast, but when they do play fast, they tend to be pretty good. And, you know, they're a low turnover team. So, I mean, it's tough for if you're Phoenix, because you're looking at this, and I feel like they had a really good chance to win this series had Chris Paul not gotten injured. But that at this point is kind of the story of Chris Paul's career.
Yeah, I can seeing him over there fuming on the bench with the mask on yesterday kind of reminded me of watching him sit over there during Game 6 and Game 7 Rockets Warriors a couple seasons ago. And I mean, that's not even going back into his Clippers history and beyond. So yeah, it is the story of his career. What do you guys think about Drummond? You know, I know Jovan, you wrote about it, but I mean, had a good game, no doubt.
I thought it was his most impactful game as a Laker, and I asked Frank Vogel about that after the game, and he agreed. And you know, I know the stakes probably add to that, but Drummond is at his best when he doesn't have to think. He just, you know, he needs to be in positions where you're basically spoon feeding him the ball, and he just goes up. And even in those cases, sometimes he'll blow a layup or something and then tip it in. But as we've seen, he is not a good post player. You do not want him catching the ball, going one on one, facing up, trying to make a dribble spin move. Like, he can't really do those things. But I thought you know, there were several sequences where he just kind of flashed cut into space because you know, Phoenix was sort of loading up on LeBron and AD. And there's one play where just he's in the dunker spot, flashes middle, catches a pass and lays it in wide open. And it's like, those are the plays you need from Andre Drummond. I thought from a physical standpoint, he matched DeAndre Ayton. He was pushing him back. I know Ayton had that nice kind of spin dunk on him, kind of knocked him over and then dunked on him. But I thought, like, Andre Drummond did everything you could ask of Andre Drummond. And is he perfect? No. Is the spacing better when he's off the floor? Yes. And is this going to be the Andre Drummond we see the rest of the playoffs? No, but he did his job. He helped the Lakers win a game. And I do think that, like, there clearly is some type of role for him. I still think the Lakers need to figure out the optimal role, but he has value. And I think he's been pretty solid, honestly, in the first two games. I do think this is a more Drummond-friendly matchup versus playing like a Luka or a Nets team or something like that, maybe down the road. But I think he's been solid, and that's all you can really ask for him.
Yeah, I mean, he was not a net negative. I mean, I think that Warriors game, you were sitting there just kind of pulling your hair out, feeling like every minute he was on the floor, the Lakers were, you know, at risk of losing the game. And I thought, you know, he did his job and really kind of justified his presence on, and really, I thought justified Frank Vogel's trust and commitment to him. You know, I mean, there was a ton of effort on the offensive glass. I mean, there was one possession where he tipped it up three times, I think, and finally got it to go. And you see that from time to time, but he's not a guy who is the most vertically gifted player. He's not the springiest dude. I mean, sometimes you'll see, you know, JaVale McGee do that because he, you know, has just more lift and spring than whoever's there with him. But I thought that was just a great, you know, microcosm of the effort that Andre Drummond put in to that game. And listen, I think Drummond is more playable if you're playing guys who spread the floor behind him. So when he comes off the floor last night, we saw in the first quarter, we saw Marc Gasol and Markieff Morris come in. And Markieff didn't have maybe the impact that Frank Vogel was looking for, but I mean, Mark sure did. And I think there's balance there. There is, you know, there's kind of a yin and a yang as opposed to going Drummond and Montrezl Harrell and just constantly loading up the paint. So I think, you know, I think that was an encouraging sign from the way, you know, the Lakers are looking at things.
No question. Schroeder had juice.
Very good.
Night, which changes it.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, you know what's crazy? And Jovan and I were talking about this last night. It's in his story today. But four players scored what, Jovan? 96 of the Lakers. Yeah. Of how many?
109.
13 or 109. I mean, that's just insane that you had four guys who combined for, you know, what, 90% of your points. And, you know, I mean, probably not sustainable, but, you know, probably not what you want to see. You probably want to see a little more from, you know, the Crusoes, Kuzmas, KCPs of the world. But again, I mean, Drummond and Schroeder did enough to give LeBron and AD the support they needed.
Why do you think Kuzma's been so quiet? I mean, because he played this same role last year in the bubble and did it well, and really for a lot of the season did it well. And like, I remember in the bubble being like, you know, man, he hasn't hit. I don't think he had 20 points all playoffs, and that was going into the playoffs. I kind of thought he was going to be one of those like just random spurt scores where it's like 4 points, 5 points, oh, 27 points in a game, you know, right, back to five. No, he was like pretty steady, you know, in the 8 to 12 range while playing good, kind of versatile defense. He's gone completely silent in this series. What, like, why do you think that is?
He's 1 for 6 in 2 games. And, you know, I wanted to check his minutes because I feel like his minutes have been way down, and they're down. I mean, he's under 20. He's, you know, right around 19 minutes in each of the first 2 games. So that's down a little bit. But I mean, there's really no reason for him not to be getting more shots up in this matchup that I can figure. I don't feel like there's any reason that, you know, he shouldn't be getting open looks on the wing and attacking. And, you know, I just feel like he's sort of, I mean, you could have told me he played 12 minutes last night. I would have believed you. He just has not been impactful on the floor. And maybe he hasn't done anything noticeably bad on defense either. So maybe that's, you know, speaks well of what he's done on that end. But I really feel like Kyle Kuzma, you could tell me that he was, you know, accidentally in Scottsdale the entire time, and I wouldn't know. Like, just a completely unmemorable first 2 games for him.
Yeah, I thought he was solid defensively. On they put him on Booker a little bit last night, and I thought
I remember him getting isolated on Booker a couple times. Yeah,
length bothered him. I'm not sure. I will say I've been surprised at how small of a role he's played. He's only played 39 minutes through the 2 games, and I would have expected that total to be closer to like 50, 55. You know, he has essentially been their sixth man this season. I mean, he's been the leading bench guy, and then the token starter when AD or LeBron are out. So I thought, you know, for him to be seventh on the team in field goal attempts, and looking at it, seventh in minutes. Like, I guess the minutes makes more sense there. But I mean, they've just been going so much LeBron and AD that I feel like it's kind of marginalized him in the offense. And he has played a lot of his minutes with those AD bench units where it just all is AD posting up, and like there's no movement. They got to figure that out, which I think is partially why he has a negative plus minus. Because some of those units have been pretty bad. So I don't know. It's weird. I don't feel like he's been passing up shots. Like, that's one thing you can rely on from Kuz, is he's not going to pass up shots if he's open. But yeah, it's probably the pendulum's probably swung a little bit too much in the not shooting, not finding ways to get going. But also, he's going up against like Jay Crowder, you know, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. Like, those guys have been playing some really good defense as well. So I think you also probably have to give Phoenix some credit there too.
Yeah, and Vogel's just not going small much, right? Yeah, I mean, that's his benefit to the Lakers, is the fact that he fits really well in a small front court of him, LeBron, and Davis, and they're just not going to it. I mean, there's matchups. If they play Portland in the next round, which would probably be the most likely opponent at this point, I would say, I think he'd have a significantly bigger role in that series. Bill, you went to Phoenix.
I did.
Tell us about it.
A lot of people without face coverings on. You know, just going to a quick point on this, because somebody was in my mentions on Twitter saying, wasn't that the point of the vaccine? And I just don't know that we're there yet as a society where I feel like we should be just random letting 16,000 random people into a building without any proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test. Like, that's what they're doing in Phoenix. Just buy a ticket, come to the game. Like, it's like party like it's 2019. And it's an awesome atmosphere, but I just don't see how that is a productive public health solution. But the arena was absolutely popping. Great response, you know, tons of Beat LA chants. You know, probably one of the more rousing moments I can remember in my career, and I'm probably a prisoner of the moment here, was when Chris Paul came back out onto the floor. Because when he left, towel over his head in game 1, I think we all thought he was done. Like, you know, separated shoulder, probably ripped up, done for the season, probably, or at least for this series. And for him to come back out on the floor, get in the huddle, and be back on the floor within minutes was pretty darn cool. And that was when they only had 11,000 people in the arena. So atmosphere wise was really, really cool. And, you know, just I hadn't been, you know, in a gym with that kind of, you know, crowd since March 10th of 2020. And so to kind of get back into that, it felt really normal. And I think, you know, that part was cool. So despite my grumpiness about the state of Arizona's, current COVID response, I thought it was a pretty neat experience to see kind of everything kind of opening back up. And also, you know, the way the Lakers responded to it. I mean, the way they talked about it. I mean, they clearly enjoyed some of the interplay with the fans. You saw LeBron engaging toward the end after that big three. I think it's kind of made the basketball a little more normal too.
What is Staples Center going to look like Sunday? Or I should say Thursday and Sunday. I mean, are they breaking it open a little bit?
They haven't said how many more people they're going to let in, but I do think it's going to kind of keep going up somewhat. And Slater, I mean, that game against the Warriors, that play-in game was, you know, 6,000 people, I think. And that was, you know, a real, you know, most they had vaccinated sections right behind the benches. So that's what you saw on TV. I thought that crowd was pretty impressive for what it was. So I don't think you're going to see the Lakers getting back to full capacity anytime soon. But I do think, or at least not before, you know, things really open up in a bigger way. But I do think, you know, it's going to be a pretty rocking atmosphere. And I'm curious to see what they do numbers wise, because, you know, if they can get a couple more thousand in there, it's just going to enhance the experience.
So wait, were fans not required to wear masks to enter?
It's such bullshit.
Or
you guys,
they can just pull it down.
No, this is bullshit. So there's signs. Oh, if masks required unless you're actively eating or drinking, but there's nobody there enforcing it. You know, they put it up on the video board once or twice. You know, nobody, like at Staples Center, you've got, and again, fewer people to enforce. And I don't know how the ushers could do this for 16,000 people, frankly, but you've got, you know, people at Staples Center with signs that say, please, you know, practice proper mask wearing. And you can't eat or drink in the bowl at Staples Center, by the way. But, you know, people got beers. I mean, there was a guy with selling churros. I mean, it was like, you know, the churro thing with just the little piece of paper and the guy walks around and sells it. And, you know, he's touching dirty cash and the churro.
We're back, baby.
And that was okay. Like, that's what's happening in Phoenix. And that's how normal things are. I mean, the police officers / security guards, I don't know if they're real cops or if they're, you know, rent-a-cops, but on the concourse in the Phoenix Suns Arena, which is the name of the arena these days, weren't wearing masks. And it's just, I know I'm coming at this from a California perspective. I know things are more open in other places than they are in California. I know California is going to be a lot more open after June 15th. But the fact that you're letting 16,000 people into an arena when they don't have to produce a negative test or a vaccination card just completely defeats the purpose, in my mind, of what we've all been through over the last 14 months.
Yeah, you got that vaccination card, Bill. So,
but I'll tell you what, I was sending my buddies a text today of that Marshawn Lynch play. Remember when he's stiff arming everybody on the touchdown for the Seahawks? I was like, this is my vaccine at work in the Phoenix Suns arena, just holding off those COVID cells coming for me. So. Hopefully, I do trust science, but I'm putting a lot of faith in science because it got swarmed last night.
From a pure viewership standpoint, I have enjoyed the first 4 days. I mean, how about that MSG crowd? How about that MSG crowd? And you know, it's cool to see normal life reopening. Yes, some places are a little bit more full throttle than others, but I am curious to see the Staples Center.
And listen, I'm not an epidemiologist. What do I know? Maybe the great state of Arizona is really onto something here. And, you know, I mean, Arizona's taken a battering over the last few months. Like, it hasn't been a great year for the PR in the state of Arizona, but you know, we'll see. I would not be surprised if there was a significant spike related to Phoenix Suns games, but what do I know? Again, not an epidemiologist. Trust science, not basketball podcasters.
All right, last thing before we get out of here. I know you guys obviously both think the Lakers are going to win this series. I do think Sunday's the swing game. I could see Paul sitting Thursday, we'll see. Maybe he'll try to play through it. But I mean, if they think a complete day off for Chris Paul would get him fully right for Sunday, I think it's the wisest move. But what are you guys looking for Thursday, game three?
Consistency from Anthony Davis. I mean, I still think he's the most important player in the series for the Lakers. And if he can, you know, continue to get to the line, I think assert himself more on the inside. I mean, the jumper was falling, but really most of his work was done from the, you know, from the foul line. He missed a lot of shots. I think he got a lot of really favorable calls. I thought they were pretty quick with the whistle last night too. So I think, you know, the numbers were really good, but I still think he has a ways to go to truly establish himself as Anthony Davis. So I want to see, you know, I want to see him either match or exceed what he did in game two.
For me, it's going to be the crowd. You know, it's the first Lakers playoff game since 2013, or at Staples Center at least. So I think, you know, I don't think they're going to be taking off their masks and eating churros in the stands, but I do think it's going to be a very crazy crowd, and sort of, you know, we saw it with the Warriors game, and that was also, you had a bunch of Warriors fans there, so it kind of was like a back and forth at times where they were chanting MVP with Steph at the free throw line. So I don't think it's going to be the same number of Phoenix fans, but I think it's going to be a fun crowd. And then the other thing is just the rotation and seeing, you know, Frank is gone. He's basically played everybody but Ben McLemore at this point. So I think it's just, who are the eight guys he trusts? We don't know that yet, and I'm excited to see that over the next couple of days.
Sweet. Thank you guys for your time today. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Forum Club.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.